First Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 6, text number 34. O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, with great zeal, whatever I say has never proved to have any been false, nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter. Repeat. O Narada. Because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hari, with great zeal. Whatever I say has never proved to have been false, nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta, Swami Prabhupada. Another long purport. Lord Brahma is the original speaker of Vedic wisdom to Narada, and Narada is a distributor of transcendental knowledge all over the world through his various disciples, like Vasudeva and others. The followers of Vedic wisdom accept the statements of Brahmaji as gospel truth, and transcendental knowledge is thus being distributed all over the world by the process of disciplic succession from time immemorial since the beginning of the creation. Lord Brahma is the perfect, liberated living being within the material world, and any sincere student of transcendental knowledge must accept the words and statements of Brahmaji as infallible. The Vedic knowledge is infallible because it comes down directly from the Supreme Lord into the heart of Brahma, and since he is the most perfect living being, Brahmaji is always correct to the letter. And this is because Lord Brahma is a great devotee of the Lord who has earnestly accepted the lotus feet of the Lord as the supreme truth in the Brahma Samhita, which is compiled by Brahmaji. He repeats the aphorism Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. I am the worshipper of the original personality of Godhead Govinda, the primeval Lord. So whatever he says, whatever he thinks, and whatever he does, normally in his mood, are to be accepted as truth because of his direct and very intimate connection with Govinda, the primeval Lord. Sri Govinda, who pleasingly accepts the loving transcendental service of his devotees, gives all protection to the words and actions of his devotees. The Lord declares in Bhagavad Gita 9:31, Kaunteya pratijanihi. O son of Kunti, please declare it. The Lord tells Arjuna to declare, and why? Because sometimes the declaration of Govinda himself may seem contradictory to mundane creatures. But the mundaner will never find any contradiction in the words of the Lord's devotees. The devotees are especially protected by the Lord so that they may remain infallible. Therefore, the process of devotional service always begins in the service of the devotee who appears in disciplic succession. The devotees are always liberated, but that does not mean that they are impersonal. The Lord is a person eternally, and the devotee of the Lord is a person eternally. Because the devotee has his sense organs even at the liberated stage, he is therefore a person always. And because the devotee's service is accepted by the Lord in full reciprocation, the Lord is also a person in his complete spiritual embodiment. The devotee's senses, being engaged in the service of the Lord, never go astray under the attraction of false material enjoyment. The plans of the devotee never go in vain. And all this is due to the faithful attachment of the devotee for the service of the Lord. This is the standard of perfection and liberation. Anyone beginning from Brahmaji down to the... Okay, we'll go that far to start with it. Very... repetitive. Sometimes people are looking for something new, but this is all new and fresh. Om Agyana Timirandasya Ginandana Shalakaya Chakshur Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shiguru Shiuta Padakamalam Shigurun Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sabarutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shishi Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namini Gora Tuche Namaha. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu, Jagat Pate, Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namostute, Tapta, Kanchana, Gaurange, Radhe, Vrindavaneshwari, Vishabhanu, Sute, Devi, Pranamami, Hari, Priye, Vanchakalpa, Trubhyastra, Kripa, Sindhu, Vyevacha, Patitanam, Pavane, Vyo, Vaishnavi, Vyo, Namah. Many information there. Of course, very strongly stressing Brahma's high position. Somebody you asked the other day, right? That there's some story how Brahma became attracted to his daughter. So these kind of things are there just to give the atheist some excuse to reject things. Somebody else is eating now?
No, I have to go to class also. I listen to your class.
Okay. No, it's okay. The apparent contradictions, Krishna Prabhupada explains. The atheists will look in the scripture and find things that they think are contradictory, and then they have a good excuse to reject it. So the mind will always do that, but a devotee understands, like Mother Yasoda would get very bewildered by Krishna sometimes, but then by just remembering Krishna's leelas, then she'd become peaceful again. Because it's inconceivable. So the activities of the great devotees also nobody can understand. Even scholars, they'll look at the history of ISKCON and say, well, you know, Prabhupada said some one thing one time, said another thing another time, therefore, you know, he didn't know things, and devotees don't see it that way. Devotees see it as all divine. There's no, you know, the absolute truth is serving Krishna, but how to serve Krishna, there's no absolute rules. Like, he was talking to Lokanath Swami one time in the early days of Vrindavan, telling him, you're a sannyasi, you have to travel all the time. To always travel and preach. So the temple president, who was a sannyasi, was there. And he heard all this. And then he said, but Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, no, you can't travel, you have to stay here. So he was telling one, you're a sannyasi, you have to travel. The other one, he's saying, you're a sannyasi, you have to stay here. So somebody might say, well, that's contradictory. But it's not contradictory because everybody's different. And the spiritual master is giving everybody what's the best for them, the best service for them. So devotees understand that. Otherwise, you know, Krishna, they'll look through the scriptures and say, well, it says this here, it says that there. The deprogrammers used to carefully read the Bhagavatam and then tell people, look, it says here like this, but it says over here like that. You're going to believe this. How can you believe this? It's contradictory. So I don't know if they got purified by reading the Bhagavatam in that mentality, but they did study it. They looked for things that they thought were contradictions. But for the devotee, doesn't find it that way. So Brahma is the head of the Sampradaya, and whatever he's saying there is absolute. Can't be challenged. And he's saying here because he took shelter. And anyone who takes shelter and speaks the same thing that's coming down in disciplic succession, then they also have this Shakti. That, you know, and even what they say will become true. It's like Kunti. She was such a pure devotee, pure brahmana, that whatever she say would have to be true. So when Arjuna came back with Draupadi, he had won Draupadi in the Swayamvara, and the others were there. So their policy, they were at that time in disguise as brahmanas, and they would just go out begging every day, all the five Pandavas, and then they would share whatever they got equally. Not equally, Bhima got half, and then the others got the rest for the right whatever food they got. And Bhima was always hungry, anyway. But so they said, "Well, wait till you see what Arjuna got today." And she was in the other room, and she said, "Whatever it is, you have to share it equally." That was Draupadi, so they had to marry Draupadi. Then they were bewildered, because normally a woman doesn't have more than one husband. So Yudhisthira researched, and he found some instances in the Vedic history or something, but he wasn't convinced. So then Vyasadeva came, and then he discussed it with Vyasadeva, and then Vyasadeva told some history of various exceptions to that rule. And it was bona fide in this case that Draupadi would have five husbands. Also, that was a benediction she had from Lord Shiva from the previous life. So there's so many different factors that, you won't be able to see directly from an ordinary person and think, well, you can't do this, you have to do that. But, the things have to be considered in a much different way. Draupadi was doing, in a previous life, great tapasya to get a husband to Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva came and said, "What do you want?" she was so excited, she said, "I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband." So he said, "All right, I'll give you five husbands." She said, no, I only want one." He said, "No, you asked five times, you have to have five." And that's why she got five husbands. And there's even more to it. So, but it's not like every woman can say, "Well, Draupadi had five husbands, so I can have five husbands." So, right? Like in the Bible, there's one incident where there was a woman at the well, and she was asking for something, and he told her, "You have five husbands, and the one you're with now is not even your husband. So you're sinful." Normally, that would be very sinful for a woman. Men, in higher culture can have more than one wife, but in this age, at least in our movement for sure, Prabhupada said no. But there can be exceptions to every rule, but the exceptions are also rules in the Vedas. That's why Yudhisthira's Dharmaraj, Ramachandra's Dharmaraj, you can accept every rule, but you have to accept it according to the rules also, not whimsically. And not just anybody can say, "Well, so-and-so broke that rule, so I can do it also." Like in Hawaii, many devotees think that four regular principles is very oppressive, like Nazism. So one devotee was saying, he read that the Brij Pasis, in Vrindavan, the Krishna's time, it says they didn't follow regulated principles. So he said, "So I'm an advanced devotee now, I don't have to follow regulated principles," meaning he can take intoxication. But it wasn't that they're taking intoxication, eating meat, they don't have the strict regulated life like a Vaidhi Bhakti has to have. Rise early, chant a certain number of rounds, do this, do that. They don't have to do that. They are totally always absorbed in Krishna's service. So it says for Brahma, because he's completely surrendered to Govinda, whatever he does, whatever he thinks, whatever he says, are accepted as truth because of his direct connection. Tene Veda Brahma Yadi Kavaye. Krishna gave the knowledge to Brahma in his heart, through the heart, and then he gave it to Narada. But then Krishna tells Arjuna, "You tell it," because sometimes people think Brijvasis are not truthful. You find contradictions in Krishna's life, like Shalva. We don't know even what caste Krishna is. We don't know if he was, who his father is for sure. Nobody knows. He's a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. You know, he's a bump. He's a crazy man. That's what Shalva, that's what the Shishupal said. Others didn't agree. They would kill Shishupal, but that's how the demons will see Krishna. Demon scholars are still like that all over. They have so many different ideas about Krishna that have nothing to do with Krishna. Even some of them, they know the Bhagavatam even very much. They know the words, but they can't. They think that Krishna is just some myth because they can't believe that anyone could be like the Bhagavatam says Krishna. Because they're thinking he's a human. And I'm a human, and I couldn't do all those things. My father was very atheistic. And he never read books very much. He read his, you know, technical books for his work and magazines. And but somehow he picked up the Krishna book and he read. But he happened to read how Krishna had 16,000 wives. And it's Krishna. And he got, oh, he was kind of me, how can you believe this? You're being cheated. I couldn't have 16,000 wives. Nobody can do that. How can you believe this? That old man's cheating you like anything. So they think like that. It can't be true because they can't do it. They want to have 16 million wives, normal men in the world, but they can't even take care of one wife. And they can't stand to see that, and that Krishna's, you know, doing all these things. So they just don't believe it because there's nobody can do it. Nobody can, you know, do these things that Krishna did. So they want to say that can't be true, that Krishna's just a myth. He was some, you know, obviously better, great personality. He had some ability to bring together different tribes. And then as the time went on, they built it up, and made up more and more stories about him. And then they said he was God. You know, they say like that. And that's what they teach in the university. They teach that India was just some kind of cavemen or something until Europeans came and introduced Sanskrit language and Vedic culture. There's absolutely no evidence of that, but the Europeans, you know, they saw there was superior culture in India, so they tried to prove that it came from Europe. And that's what they teach in the university. Now there's people teaching otherwise and defeating all of it, but still that's the basic teaching that anybody will learn. My mother took a night school and studied Indian history or something, and she told me very strongly that this is the way it was. So I just kind of laughed. I started to contradict, but she was too convinced because she heard it from the professor, you know, from the book. So they believe all this stuff. And there's so much insanity. So Krishna says, Mamcha yoga vicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatit jaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. And then Prabhupada just quoted that one many times in this chapter. Anyone who's earnestly serious in heart and soul about being in intimate touch with the personality of Godhead in the relationship of transcendental loving service will always be infallible in words and action. So that's what we're striving for, to be really connected to Krishna. How to connect to Krishna is by service, by loving devotional service. Most translators will translate bhakti as divine love, and then that leaves room for so much speculation, comparing it to mundane love affairs. But Prabhupada made it clear what it means, devotional service. That's how we connect to Krishna. That's what everyone wants, to be a servant of Krishna. The wives of Krishna in Dwarka did the normal housework. They wanted to serve Krishna. They had many servants. They were queens, but they wanted to personally serve Krishna. So when like Draupadi met the wives, they all said, I became the maid servant of Krishna. They didn't think I became the big queen and now I have so many maid servants. They wanted to serve Krishna. So that if we develop that service attitude, loving service, or we're trying to just please Krishna, then we get intimately connected. Then we can preach and it will be effective. Devotees can preach effectively because they have that connection. But any amount of mental speculation on the strength of material science and knowledge without a bona fide touch with the absolute truth is sure to be a mundane untruth and failure, simply due to not being in touch with the absolute truth. Such godless, unfaithful words and actions, however, materially enriched, are never to be trusted. This is the purport of this important verse. A grain of devotion is more valuable than tons of faithlessness. So most of the scholars that try to teach about Krishna or Vedas or anything, they have no faith. They know a lot. They may know the whole Bhagavatam by heart. They know, you know, they can tell you so many things. But they have no faith. They just think it's like some exercise to memorize things. That makes them great. But one has to be able to have faith. So this is stressed again and again. The tenth offense is to not have complete faith, and that's considered very serious. To be chanting without faith is an offense, and if one is chanting without faith, just chanting because, you know, for whatever reason, but not having faith in Krishna and the Guru and the process that it's absolute truth, he'll give up chanting at some point. This is stressed in, I don't know, all scripture I know in the Bible, so much stress is given on faith. And then the Krishna says, Ashadana Purusha Dharmas Yasya Parantapa Aprapya Mam Nivartante. Those who don't have faith in the process, they'll never attain me. So even if they're practicing the mechanics, chanting or doing artik or whatever they're doing, if it's mechanical, if they're not doing it with faith, they're just thinking it's their culture, or I have to do this to be able to live in the temple and eat and sleep for free, or whatever reason, they're not going to last very long. So we see many people come, many people go. They benefit by whatever they did. But as much faith as we have in when we're doing things, then we get more benefit. And you can find so many slokas throughout the Bhagavatam, throughout the Gita, mentioning this faith. Sometimes devotees think, well, you know, it's only in ISKCON that people lose faith because the GVC is so bad or because this and that. But why did Krishna put it in the Bhagavad Gita? That those who don't have faith will fall down. Because it's always the case. Now, of course, because it's Kali Yuga, much more. There's always been demons on earth, but now there's much more because it's Kali Yuga. There's always been drunkards, there's always been meat eaters, there's always been, except in the very beginning of such a yuga. But now there's much more. The percentage is much, much higher because it's Kali Yuga. But it's not a new thing. They may think it's new and innovative that they're chanting Hare Krishna while they're intoxicated, but that's not new and innovative. There's been people doing that. In India, it's a common thing. That's why the hippies, some of our hippie gurus, they went to India. And that's where they learned that marijuana and smoking hashish is a meditation. It's spiritual, not intoxication. So they came back and taught it like that. Then it caught on like anything. You know, that this is the way to God. Because they associated with these sadhus, so-called sadhus in India that are always smoking. That's their sadhana. But that there are others that don't do that. They're real Vaishnavas. And I went one time, we were at Kumbh Mela, we were coming back and we had to wait in one train station, the train was late. So one, we were walking around the town and one young boy got all excited and he was taking me to visit his temple and he took me to his friend that had a bong shop. And the guy was offering me every different kind of bong that they have, you know. And I wasn't taking it. And the guy said that this, he said, what kind of sadhu is this? Doesn't want to get intoxicated. He said, he's Vaishnava, he's a real sadhu, you know. They think, you know, that all the sadhus come and their pious activity. Even Prabhupada said, with his father, he would visit one sadhu, and he said, "I was carrying the hashish." And the devotee said, "What?" Prabhupada said, "Well, that's what he wanted." He said, "In India, this, for a sadhu, it's considered okay. For an ordinary person, it's not." But that's not the Vaishnava strict culture. In our, you know, we take a vow not to. So there's many, many things that bewilder everybody. The scriptures bewilder people. Krishna's pastimes bewilder people. When Krishna left the planet, he left something like a dead body. So the atheists can say, just see, he died. So they can be happy. They can confirm their atheistic rules. So these contradictions are for that purpose. Those who don't want to have faith in Krishna, they can find reasons not to. They can find reasons not to practice strict sadhana because so-and-so, according to them, was practicing, but he fell down. Like some of our biggest book distribution leaders, they fell down after many, many years of inspiring so much book distribution. So some devotees thought, well, I guess it's not good to distribute books. They fell down. So maybe that's why. But Prabhupada said that it's not because distributing books is wrong, it's just because they were doing it wrong. They got puffed up. Pride. You know, we can use our material assets, whatever we have, to do something in Krishna consciousness. But if we're proud of that and think I'm doing it, then it won't last. Someone else who doesn't have much, but if they're offering everything in love for Krishna, they'll make great spiritual advance. So we're hearing from Lord Brahma. Brahma Samhita is one of the most important scriptures. And throughout the Bhagavatam, Brahma is one of the major speakers. Second canto, third canto, especially Brahma, and tenth canto, there's a lot of prayers from Brahma. Very, very important speaker. The devotees don't think, oh well, he got bewildered by his daughter, so we didn't hear anything from him. Because practically that was in a different lifetime. He gave up that body. It's a lila. You know, for many reasons. Whatever Krishna does, many reasons for it. So the atheists will say, well, Krishna killed his uncle. You know, Krishna was a thief. Krishna had so many girlfriends, so how can you worship such a person? God can't be like that. God can't be a small child. Like Indra, he knew, you know, about Krishna, but he couldn't believe that this little boy was Krishna, the same Krishna. He found out different when he tried to attack him. Brahma was thinking the same thing. I'll have to test this boy. I'm not sure if it's really my Lord. Because he had knew Krishna as an adult. So we have faith in all these things, and therefore we can make spiritual advancements. All right, any question? You gotta speak up.
Before I become a devotee, I was involved a little bit in Native American shamanism.
Yeah.
And North America and South America is a slight difference, but basically the same. And they're using some, they call it medicine. Like in North America, they'll use peyote. In South America, they'll use like a cousin of peyote.
Yeah.
And they also use like some jungle vine. And actually, I did these things, and I did in like Native American ceremonies, and they had it like very regulated. Like you had to fast before you do it, and you couldn't like drink coffee or tea or alcohol, like for as long as, like, if you were going to do the medicine for a week, then you had to abstain from sex and alcohol and caffeine for a week before and then a week after. seemed like actually it helped. But I don't know if this, if it's just that Vaishnava doesn't know about this, what exactly it is, or if it's actually not to be done, or, but I found it actually helpful, but I'm not sure, you know, if that is included in intoxication, because for them they simply call it as their medicine.
Yeah. That's what these sadhus do. They, you know, she writes, they smoke ganja, it's ceremonial, they have mantras and everything. But it's intoxication. It helps, you know, somehow or other. Maybe they do it in some way where they get some discipline. That's good. But it's still depending on this external thing, right? So, but one disciple I had in Greece, and I thought she was like, I mean, she just was so fired up doing everything, and everybody thought, wow. But then she had some friends over in the shamanism thing, and then she got into it. And previously she'd been very much drug addict. And then she said, no, it's not intoxication because they do it for prayer. And they have ceremonies so that, you know, for them it's something. You know, it's some, like the Shivites, I guess. You know, something like that. Because the whole, it's old ceremonies and it all, you know, originally everything was, you know, the whole world. You'll find many, many things in the American native culture that are inside, you know, Sanskrit things. I think swastikas, there are many, many, many things people find when they go back. But they've been separated, you know, due to Kali Yuga, so things get like that. But like Allen Ginsberg, he told Prabhupada that somebody's guru had... you know, told him that LSD is God in this age. LSD is the incarnation of Krishna. And he said, isn't that right? Prabhupada said, no. He said, no, isn't that true? You know, it's Kali Yuga and Krishna is so clever, he makes it very easy. You just take some little pill and then you get Krishna. And that was common belief, you know. But most people took LSD, their realization would be that I am God. But Prabhupada said no. He said it's still, you had depending on something external, some chemical, you know. And you don't need that. Krishna is within. All you need is chant his name. Allen Ginsberg couldn't really accept that. Although he liked Prabhupada and he helped him anyway. For his own personal life, he preferred to believe that by taking LSD, he was ingesting Krishna and getting intimate association with Krishna. So. Alright? So it's something, you know, that maybe devotees get a little, you know. But this girl went totally into it and she did. You know, started eating fish or something. She said, I said, well, if it's so much better, why don't you get me into it? And she said, no, well, if you're happy, that's all right, but I wasn't happy. Now I'm happy. Because she became like a guru of that. She became like a leader of their yogis. All right? So it's still intoxication. But, you know, like if somebody is dying of cancer and they take a morphine. Painkiller, they don't get intoxicated from it. It just works as a painkiller. So you can't condemn a devotee who's, you know, the doctor gives them the painkillers. But if someone isn't sick and they take the same medicine, right, then it's intoxication, for sure. But, you know, the mind can come up with many, many things. So there's many devotees that smoke ganja, and they very reverent ganja, and they have the Shiva mantras, and they say if you chant the Shiva mantras, then you get a much better, but they don't call it intoxicated. You see Krishna, you can hear his flute and all these things, but they're just intoxicated, like, so much. And there's no scripture anywhere that Shiva takes any kind of intoxication. Shiva drank the ocean of poison. So they say, well, he drank the ocean of poison, so we can take poison. But his drinking the ocean of poison didn't affect him. Except it made a little blue on his throat. It wasn't for intoxication, it was to save the world. So, all right?
Yeah.
Anything else? Any other question? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada.